Thank you very much. I'd like to begin by thanking the organizers and the ITP for this wonderful meeting and for inviting me to present some of our work. Actually, the bottom line, I mean, this second line is more important than the first, only that made it into the title. I mean, those of you who expect some high-resolution thing like the previous talk will be disappointed, but we sort of concentrate on other models, which I will tell you about. And this work has been done by several students, Shujan Dhar, Anirban Sank, who's here. He's a summer student, he's my current student, computations done at our supercomputer center. And the students were very kindly, of course, paid by the CSIR of India. Okay. So here's an outline of my talk. First, motivation. I will spend a little bit of time on multi-scaling, this procedure called extended self-similarity, generalized extended self-similarity. I will then try to argue that these help you to uncover some sort of a crossover from the inertial to the dissipation range. I will talk a bit about filamentary structures, that I will not talk too much about probability distributions because, I mean, I don't think we have anything very detailed to say about them. And I had dynamical scaling there. I will not talk about that at all at the moment anyway. Okay, so what are the models that we will look at? Of course, the Navier-Stokes equation, then this particular shell model. I know many of you probably know a lot about shell models, but because there might be a few people who are sort of not from physics departments, but I think I will quickly go over that. And then there is another model called the randomly forced Navier-Stokes equation. Of course, the previous talk also had some random forcing, but I will tell you how the one here is different. Then I'll tell you basically our results and so on. Okay, I mean, here is things that you all know, but just to establish notations, I will put them up. You know, we all like to look at the scaling of these inertial range, real space structure functions. I distinguish real from K because most of our work is done in K space, and therefore the real ones I indicate with some calligraphic symbol, and this thing goes as R to some power zeta P in this inertial range where that's the Kolmogorov scale, and people tell me it's actually really only up to some 20 eta sub D. Kolmogorov 41 is P divided by 3. And here is the magical formula of Schur and Levesque, which works beautifully. I mean, I always use it as a way of parametrizing experimental data and what roughly we should get at. Okay. Now, of course, this is not what is found in experiments, meaning this. All right. And so it increases monotonically with P, with delta zeta P, not a linear. Okay. Benzi and his co-workers suggested that instead of plotting versus R, suppose you do log-log plots of SP versus S3, and to the extent that zeta 3 is 1, you can extract zeta P from plots like that, and it turns out then that this actually presents an extended inertial range, and therefore does improve fits. I mean, many of you probably don't approve of such things, but anyway, I mean, when you look at anything, it certainly, to the eye, does extend the fits. And a couple of years later, Benzi et al. Suggested something even more strange, which is this generalized extended self-similarity. You take this thing, and you sort of divide it by S3 of R to the power of P by 3, and they said when you do log-log plots of this GP versus GQ, you find a straight line. With a slope, the details of this don't matter. All you need to know is that there is a slope, and that's related to these previous zeta p's and zeta q's. And they said that this goes down to the lowest resolvable r. Okay. Now, actually, when we read this paper, we did not know of some work of Stolovitsky and Srinivasan, but actually they had done this work well before anything we did. And they had noticed soon after Benzi and his co-workers suggested ESS that if you actually plot ESS plots, I'll show you some as we go along, then yes, the inertial range thing is extended, but it does veer off from the inertial range, and there seem to be some sort of power in the dissipation range. Okay, so we will try to see whether we can get at that power. Of course, this is not true anymore. This is an old transparency. The best investigation of the far dissipation range was done by Chen et al. From a, I think, 512 cube DNS, and they fit the form EC1 k to the C2 thing, and this was the range over which they fit. This is, you know, quite a daunting task, and I think this is perhaps the best fit in that range for E of k. Okay. Now, all right. So we will look at some of this. And how will we look at it? I mean, we will, of course, use this model, which is the best model to use. And we will have a deterministic force. It's more or less deterministic, but it is since everybody is worrying about precisely how you force, we hold the first two shells in K-space at some given value, so that that's what forces the thing. The important thing here is that the forcing is at large spatial scales. If you carry out a Fourier transform, this is well known to all of you, but I'll just put it up again, you get this equation. And the important point about this equation that I want to point out is that there is a sum over all q in this term. V dot rad v will couple every mode in k space, which is not true, for example, in the shell models that I'll be employing later. Before going to the shell models, let me now tell you about this randomly forced Navier-Stokes equation, which is the same equation here, excuse me, except that this force is now replaced by a stochastic force with zero mean. Oops, there's no I there. And this statistics. The important thing is that there is k to some power here, so you are forcing at all spatial scales. I think historically this has been of some importance in the sort of renormalization group literature. I think it was first noticed by Denominatus and Martin that if you set y equal to 4 and do some one loop renormalization group, then you get k41. And then two groups, Yakut and Orsag in this country and Jayanta Bhattacharjee in India, calculated several things for this model, and it was quite successful. However, many people, including people in this audience, pointed out several shortcomings of it. And so for a while, I think people used to say, you know, perhaps it's not such a great model. But as far as I know, nobody studied any multi-scaling issues in it. And so we set ourselves the task of doing it. I just contrast here the sort of forcing that we have. This is the forcing in conventional Navier-Stokes, which I will call 3D NSE. And here is the forcing in the randomly forced NSE. And there is, of course, some difference between the two, but I will get to that as we go along. Now, why do we use shell models? Well, we use shell models because all of us can't afford to do very big simulations. Even this is wrong now. I said the best can attain 220, but as we learned in the previous talk, that number is 480 now. So the strategy in shell models is to concentrate on the energy cascade towards high wave vectors, label Fourier components of velocity by logarithmically spaced k vectors, okay? Space like this, the dynamical variables become complex scalar velocities for each shell n. And instead of summing over all q's like we had in Navier-Stokes, we assume that there is some sort of locality in k-space, and so there is interaction only between nearest and next nearest neighbor shells. The system is forced at large scales. Dissipation takes care of energy, and therefore you get an energy cascade. Of course, you have no vorticity, etc. Okay? But the results are often akin to what is seen in experiments. Okay, just for the record, let me show you what the equations look like. Here is dvn dt, here is the viscous term, here is the forcing, here is the nonlinear term, and basically all you need to know is that it's linear in the k's, and that there is interaction between nearest and next nearest neighbor velocity shells. These constants, which you might think are adjustable, all get fixed if you demand that the shell model analog of the energy and the helicity be conserved in the inviscid unforced limit. It turns out that this sort of Kolmogorov 41 type solution is a stationary solution, and we use basically the standard forcing parameters, etc., contained in this paper. I can give you all references if you want. And the only difference is, instead of forcing the fourth shell as it is in this paper, we have forced the first shell. Okay, since we'll be worrying about structure functions, let me tell you what structure functions are used for this shell model. Here is basically what I would call a k-space structure function. This mod vn to the power of p, the mean value. Turns out there is a sort of irritating period 3 oscillation in this shell model. This is noted by many of the early workers in this field, and then Kadanoff and his co-workers suggested that it goes away if you use this more complicated structure function. And both of them do seem to scale as k to the minus zeta p, and this removes those period 3 oscillations, as I'll show you in a minute. The ESS procedure also removes these oscillations, okay? But anybody wants details, I can give you more. I will not cover this today. Okay. Now, also suffice it to say that you can define the analogs of EK. By the way, EK here will be mod VK squared divided by K, not K squared VK squared, because of the one-dimensional structure and the logarithmic sampling of K-space. Similarly, you can define shell model analogs of the Taylor microscale and VRMS, and thence the Taylor microscale Reynolds number. Okay, so let me first summarize the results for the first part of this talk, which is that we propose and verify wave vector space versions of ESS and GESS. Turns out you can then use them to uncover apparently universal multiscaling in the far dissipation range. Okay, I will show you what the quality of the data are. And we do so by computing wave vector space structure functions, both for 3D Navier-Stokes with and without hyperviscosity, and the Guay shell model. Okay? We also tried to check this thing, that whether the zeta p's sort of approach p divided by 3 with increasing Re lambda, at least in the Guay case, doesn't seem to be the case. And we looked at a few structures, but I probably get to that later. Okay, so let me quickly show you how well you can do the shell model. This is, of course, nothing new. It was well known to people before us. This is the structure function without that fancy three-term correlation function. You can see the period 3 cycles. Then I told you there was another structure function suggested by Kadanoff and co-workers. It gets rid of them. And if you get rid of them, you can fit pretty good straight lines here on such log-log plots. And from it, you can extract a good multiscaling exponent, which falls very much on the Shilovec line, well below p divided by 3. So this is what I meant, that I mean, in spite of their simplicity, and you might sort of worry about whether they make sense at all, you can get reasonably good multiscaling exponents. If you ask me exactly why, I'm not sure I know, but at the moment the strategy seems to be the proof of the pudding is in the eating. Okay, for those who want all details, I have them in tables, so at various stages, if you ask me precisely how much did you run, etc., I can tell you both for these models and for the randomly forced model. And then most of the Navier-Stokes runs that we have done are low Reynolds numbers, because after all, I mean, there's nothing new to find at high Reynolds numbers with our sort of resolution. Our strategy was more to try to see if there is any crossover from the inertial range to the dissipation range. And let me first present the results and then show you how what the plots look like. So even in Navier-Stokes now, we define these k case-based structure functions, which is not the first thing you would write down if you were sort of thinking completely theoretically, but it's very convenient when you're doing a DNS to just take the mod of this and take it to the pth power. And we found, and this is, I think, basically just a case-space version of what Stolovitzky and Srinivasan found, that there is one power in the inertial range and another power in the dissipation range. This lambda is where hydrodynamics will eventually break down. And it does seem to extend just as its R-space version extended. Okay? And of course, with exponents alpha p and zeta prime p, which are distinctly different. For the Goy case, given the sort of peculiar nature of the way in which you sample case space, zeta p prime is zeta p. Now, this is not an exact formula, but it's the conjecture we have, which seems to be, you know, with our low resolution, we can fit, but, you know, and we can make a heuristic suggestion that this might be right. But this is just, if you like, a way of parametrizing the relation between the k-space exponent and the real space exponent. Now, if you then believe this crossover from inertial to dissipation range, and if you really want all the details of exactly the k-dependences of these structure functions, they will then follow from the precise k-dependences of the third-order structure function in the inertial range and the dissipation range. Here, not surprisingly, it will be a power. And here, it's k to some power times an exponential. Okay? And so this whole thing will get raised to whatever power you had up here. Okay? These factors of 9 by 2 will get suppressed in the Goy model. And this is something we hadn't quite appreciated earlier, but this exponential decay is actually not there in the Goy model. In the Goy model, like in all shell models, it'll be a stretched exponential. But recall that in the capital lambda is where hydrodynamics breaks down, so I shouldn't even be doing hydrodynamics. No, shell is not even there is what I would, right. Okay. Yeah, we are doing it with resolution of ours. Right. And we just think, right. So, for example, let me show you some shell model data for this veering off. So this is this 12th order structure function, which at least you can trust in the shell model versus log S3. Here is the inertial range, and it is sort of bending over into the dissipation range. And the claim is that this GESS, which looks quite strange, of course, has a wave vector space analog, which is just mimicry of Benzi and Group's real space version. You take the pth order structure function divided by the third order to the power p by 3, then make log-log plots of GP versus GQ, and again, there is a distinct dissipation range asymptote that I'll show you in a minute, and it will be related to these alpha p's that I had defined on the previous transparency, just as the inertial range one was related to ratios of the zeta p's. So here is a plot. This is, okay, the sixth order versus the ninth order, okay? This line is the Shilovec line, again used to parametrize the inertial range exponents. And here is a veering off from the line towards some sort of dissipation range power law, okay? The precise point at which these curves veer off depends on precisely which runs. We've got 8 Goy model runs here, and 4 Navier-Stokes runs here, the details of which are contained in that table, which you will eventually find on the web, and also in our papers. What you can do is multiply all these by different stretching factors and bring the veering off point as close as possible. And then at least at the resolution of this calculation, it seems that all the curves are falling one on top of the other. Now, this seems interesting. We have shown it within a shell model plus low resolution, low Reynolds numbers, Navier-Stokes. But it would be interesting to check in sort of a more detailed simulations and experiments whether you can get the data collapse, okay, going from inertial to dissipation range, okay? All right, how much time do I have? Okay, all right, so I mean, I hope you got the basic message of that part. If you have more questions, I can answer them later. At the same time, I just want to show that, I mean, the largest Navier-Stokes run that we had, is not as there's no turbulence. I mean, here is a plot of isovorticity tubes, isomod omega, and they're there. And the tubes are there. So it's not so low, such a low Reynolds number that nothing is there. And again, this is probably not emphasized enough. I mean, just for fun, we also plotted the iso dissipation surfaces. They're the blue-green ones. And they seem to be at completely different places relative to these tubes, okay? And they don't look tube-like either. I mean, they're sort of like shredded sheets or something. This is RE lambda of 22. This is the bottom of Professor Goethe's pile. Okay, now let me go to the randomly forced Navier-Stokes equation. Now, as I said, as far as I know, in the randomly forced Navier-Stokes equation, nobody had studied multiscaling. In fact, if you read Frisch's book, there is a derivation of E of K for that model and a suggestion that it might have log corrections, which we agree with. I think, though, we can't, of course, check the log corrections ourselves. But there's also a mystical remark saying, you know, that perhaps... I mean, note that the force is forcing all the way now. It's a power law in K. So you might wonder whether it will win over the nonlinear terms that are responsible for the cascade and show nothing. And he says, well, Kraithman tells me that the cascade terms might still win and there might be still something interesting there. But as far as I know, nobody had checked. And one of our principal results is that there is multiscaling in this model. And for whatever it is worth, ESS also works, meaning if you use the ESS procedure, you extend the range over which you see scaling, and from that you can try to find exponents which, within our error bars, are at least within error bars of fluid scaling, fluid turbulence exponent ratios, since we're using ESS. I say here that there are weak violations of von Karman-Hausdorff, by which I mean that there are log corrections, which, of course, I don't think any numerical study is going to uncover in a hurry. The other interesting study is that the vortex filaments that I just showed you for the Navier-Stokes equation seem to get completely destroyed, and yet you have multiscaling with exponent ratios that are within error bars of those of fluid turbulence. The PDFs for velocity differences are not Gaussian in the dissipation range. I mean, once you have multiscaling, I don't think that should be a surprise. And this is something that I will not talk about, but this is something which we managed in the old days to sort of coarse grain this model, which is a deterministic PDE, to relate it to this one, which is a stochastic PDE. But unfortunately, I'm sorry to say, that does not work here. At least the standard way in which we proceeded does not work here for Navier-Stokes. Okay? I mean, let me remind you of some of the reasons why some of the people in this audience criticize this model. I mean, if you look at it as a function of y and do one loop RG, you're doing pretty well here because the expansion parameter is y itself, so it's an order y expansion. By the time you're here, you're not doing so well. And in fact, at y equal to 4, there's an infinity of marginal operators, so you might worry about precisely what control you have over the calculation. However, you can say, I don't need to worry about that if I'm going to put it on the computer. And actually, that was first done by Yakut, Orsag, and Panda. And they found that you get a nice inertial range, actually. And it's bigger than you get in an analogous DNS of the three-dimensional Navier-Stokes equation. And from it, they extracted 5/3. And we do too. except we also study it as a function of y, because in the literature there was some interest in the y dependence of the exponents, and there was a suggestion that y equal to 4 is like a critical y beyond which the exponents will stay, let us say, at this two-point level at some 5/3, and our data are certainly consistent with that. This is y equal to 3, y equal to 4, y equal to 6, and y equal to 8. Okay? And 11/3 because we are doing S2k. If you want to convert it into ek, just multiply by k squared and you'll get minus 5/3. In this little box, I show you a plot of the Taylor microscale, Reynolds number versus time, normalized by some box size that you turn over time, and you can see it fluctuates a lot. So the extra advantage that you get from the extended inertial range in this model is offset quite a bit by this fluctuation. And indeed, you have to average these data much more than you have to average straight DNS data from Navier-Stokes before you can get reliable fits. But you do get high Reynolds numbers here. And basically, the reason for that is that the spectrum doesn't fall off as rapidly in the dissipation range as it does in the 3DNS. So the dissipation ranges of the two are different. Because of the power law forcing, it does not fall off exponentially. You can even try to do a dominant balance type argument and see that it can only fall off the power law. And here is a fit we have. You know, it's sort of near the power, but not exactly the power. But we don't have enough resolution here to resolve this power. But at least at the level of our calculation, this difference in the dissipation range does not seem to be affecting the inertial range power. Okay? All right, and now we can try to extract exponents as best we can from a calculation which is 64 cubed and 80 cubed, no more than that. And so we are forced to use this ESS procedure, and this graph is supposed to show you that it works. Here we have just plotted S5 versus S2. It is from slopes of these sorts of graphs that we get exponent ratios like zeta p divided by zeta 2. Okay? Now, we have data for both y equal to 4 and y equal to 6, but you will note that as the value of y increases, the force is becoming more and more like the conventional forcing at large scales. And we already noted that these things have a larger inertial range compared to conventional forcing. So as y increases, the range over which you see scaling decreases, and therefore your fit. Yes, you have a question? Did I show S3? No, I didn't, but we have it. I mean, also don't forget everything we have is modded. So we do not have data for S3 of R without the modulus time. Okay? We don't have good enough statistics for that. Do we? Huh? We don't. Yes, sorry? You wanted to see S3? Well, my belief is that that's what we will see, but with log corrections, and I don't think anybody's calculation will... So I don't think anybody's calculation will show the log corrections, but my belief is that there will be von Karman, but with log corrections. Okay. Yes, right. I mean, even Frisch, for example, in his book suggests even for EK, he suggests K to the minus 5/3 log K over K0 to the 2/3. Sorry, excuse me. Did I say that too fast? All right, but I mean, if you live at this level of exponent ratios, here is what you get. Okay, you don't like 7, we can stop at 6, doesn't matter. But this is P divided by 3. This is the Shalevek line, which is my parametrization, or his parametrization, experimental data, let's say. And these are the data for y equal to 4. I would have been delighted if the data for y equal to 6 exactly sat on y equal to 4, but, you know, we ran as long as we could, and they didn't. I mean, we certainly at the second moment level, y equal to 4 and y equal to 6 were agreeing, and at the moment they've got larger error bars, so probably that'll go away in a longer simulation, but, okay. We have these were 64 cube data, but 80 cube data don't change anything, at least from yes. No. These we actually come back to real space and do it. Okay. That was only in the earlier one, but right. Okay. So we don't use that transformation. Okay, this is see all S4R versus S2R. Okay, so and again here this is the Shilovec. This is from 80 cubed and it's nearer Shilovec than anything else. Okay, so you said I have 1 minute. All right. Okay, so let me just show you my last thing then. That here are the isomod omega contours. This is conventional 3D Navier-Stokes. This is the randomly forced Navier-Stokes with y equal to 4. I mean, these things seem to have been destroyed. All an instantaneous snapshot. But when you make y equal to 6, you can see that the filaments are coming back. Okay? Which is what you would expect because, you know, the higher the y is, the more and more you're forcing only at the largest spatial scales. Okay? So let me just put up. Okay, let me just concentrate on two things at the moment. If you want, I can ignore this because I didn't say anything about dynamical multiscaling. And so the question is, I don't know whether our experiments can somehow try to suppress filamentary structures as we do by doing a randomly forced Navier-Stokes equation to see if this changes multiscaling exponents. Can experiments explore this inertial to dissipation range crossover suggested here? And this is only for shell model people. I mean, I think, at least I don't understand why shell models, even though I use them, why they work as well as they do, because better shell models like this one, you know, don't give that. So, I mean, I think it's something the shell model community should worry about, but that can be one of the questions for the longer period of this workshop. Okay, thank you. Yes? Yes. Okay. Well, I mean, of course, I would like to agree wholeheartedly with you, but I think, in all honesty, we should do higher resolution simulations before we can completely claim that. Yes. Yes. Right. Yes. No. He did. In fact, we even refer. Yes. Uh huh. Right. I see. Epsilon meaning what I call y?
Yes,
we did, but couldn't tell. I mean, because the trouble is with y equal to 3 was that the dissipation range is cutting off so slowly that you really have to fiddle a lot before you have a believable statistical steady state, especially for higher order moments. That's why we didn't do it. Okay.
Quite different structures, but different forces.
Yes.
Almost the same scaling. This means that scaling is really not so much sensitive to structures, at least in the same unit.
Well, I mean, again, I would be happy to agree, but since I'm an old critical phenomena person, for a critical phenomena person, even 1.12 is different from 1.15. Okay, and the great victory of critical phenomena was that they pushed their experiments and calculations to the level at which they could distinguish between them. I mean, even though I would say, yes, okay, I'm happy that at least this sort of thing sets us thinking, But, you know, we should be quite careful. I mean, that we are at low resolution. I hope what we are saying will hold, but I think better resolution things need to be done. Well, probably there is some information. We didn't think very hard about it, but we can go back and try. But yes, you're right. In principle, there is information, and we didn't look at them in detail.
Okay. Let's thank the speakers for coming on time.